Welcome, everyone, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks, AFC North lead writer for BleacherReport.com and pro football-focused fantasy football contributor. I'm joined by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, now.
It's week 15 of the 2014 NFL season, and it's been a quite eventful one, even though we haven't even played any football games yet this week. It's been a lot of news. Ranging from, of course, the quarterback change in Cleveland, Cam Newton's car accident, Jadeveon Clowney, Houston defender, of course, undergoing microfracture surgery in his knee. Recovery time is 9 months at the minimum. It's a pretty hardcore procedure to try to generate collagen production in the knee. So while, you know, this might take 9 months to properly heal, it might never properly heal. The surgery might never be a complete success. So that puts the number
one overall
draft pick from 2014. His NFL future is a little bit on shaky ground at the moment. Lots of stuff going on in the National Football League, but thankfully we have a guest this week who's going to help us sort through this madness and try to make some sense out of a lot of the bigger stories around the NFL. That, of course, being CBS Sports NFL insider Jason LaCanfora.
The much esteemed
CBS Sports NFL insider Jason LaCanfora. He took some time out of his busy week to join us to talk about a bunch of these topics. So we're going to get right to that right after the break here. So stay tuned here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Jason LaCanfora up next. Our guest this week on the F-Ball NFL Podcast is none other than CBS Sports NFL insider Jason LaCanfora. Jason's joining us to help us make sense of this already eventful week in the National Football League. Thanks for joining us tonight, Jason.
Welcome. My pleasure. I don't know what I'll be able to make sense of, but I'll certainly try.
Yeah, we can at least try.
Sometimes this league's beyond explanation, but...
Amen.
So we're going to start with Cam Newton. The Carolina Panthers quarterback was in a pretty serious-looking car accident on Tuesday. Luckily, not a lot of serious injuries. He does have two fractured transverse processes in his back. Clearly, Week 15 is out of the question for him. We've seen this injury. Tony Romo actually suffered a similar injury earlier in the season, and he kind of chalked everything up to pain management. Is that going to be the same case for Cam Newton, or is this a real, you know, questionable rest of the season for him?
Well, I think what we got to understand and keep in mind is we're so used to everyone being Superman, and Cam himself obviously has his little Superman celebration, and we forget that these are human beings. They're incredibly large, they're incredibly conditioned, but the dude's car like flipped, and he's in the hospital overnight, and he may wake up tomorrow morning and not be able to turn his head. You know, like it's an incredible amount of trauma. I mean, it blows my mind. People are like, "What are you saying prayers to him? You saw the picture of him smiling. He's okay." It's like, my God, what are we dealing with here? Like,
right, you flipped your car.
I mean?
He flipped his car.
Like, I mean, you go through shock, you go through an adrenaline rush, you know, then you're strapped to a gurney and you're taking an ambulance to a hospital. And, I mean, it's not as bad as it looked because, obviously, these are, you know, potentially fatal incidences that, unfortunately, are happening at any given moment in our country and around the world. But, I mean, I would really hate to speculate because, I mean, he's a large individual, and nothing was broken and this or that, but there's going to be a lot of pain and discomfort and overall soreness and, you know, I don't know, muscle spasms. And there's a lot of things that can happen. So, yes, there is a blueprint and a sort of template for quarterbacks coming back from this particular back injury. And, you know, history would say he's probably back for week 16. But I can't, you know, guarantee that that's the only malady that comes from this. And so, you know, we'll have to let it play it out. The good news for them is they beat the Bucs in week one with Derek Anderson, and I think he completed about 71% of his passes.
Right.
The Bucs haven't really necessarily evolved much since then. So
no.
maybe the Panthers can do it again. But look, this guy's incredibly tough. If you know, he's in any way cleared to play for week 16, I'm sure he will. But it's just so unfortunate because last week was the first time he looked kind of free and easy and unencumbered all season, you know?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
he had the hip surgery, and then he had the rib stuff going on, and then he was getting destroyed by the Steelers. He had two or three games, the Ravens, where he just literally got obliterated, and he hadn't looked right for so long. And, boy, against the Saints on that fast track, it was like he was Cam again. And for this kind of freak thing to happen 72 hours later is obviously incredibly unfortunate.
It absolutely is. I mean, yeah, and especially, you know, and things are kind of – I guess you could say they're wide open in the NFC South just because, all you know, you got three teams.
Yeah,
I guess you could say that. You could say it's wide open. obviously, all of this is just terrible timing for Cam Newton. And then when you look at, you know, Tony Romo kind of being a template for this, in a sense, he's not, because Tony Romo's kind of – I mean, we've seen – all kinds of injuries that he's sustained and played through. And, you know, he's still in pretty significant pain from his fracture as well. And he, you know, he talks a lot about pain management, but he's talking about taking, you know, painkiller shots and things that pretty hardcore painkiller stuff we're talking here. So it's like Cam, it's hard to compare Cam Newton to Tony Romo because Romo has just been through so much physically.
Yeah. Well, I guess the kid Bryce Petty at Baylor, their quarterback, kind of had the same thing, missed a week or two. I mean, he's going to play if at all possible. I mean, I think we know that. And if anyone's denying that, then they're just one of these Cam haters who will always, you know, try to drag him down no matter what. If they win this game, you know, and they're still alive for a playoff spot, it would take wild horses to keep them off the field. But, you know, we'll just have to see. And, again, I'm just thinking, you know, who knows? He may wake up tomorrow and not be able to turn his head. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that was a fairly significant – that wasn't a fender bender.
No,
that was
not a fairly significant
accident.
Switching gears to another quarterback situation, the Cleveland Browns basically announced the inevitable today that Johnny Manziel would be starting instead of Brian Hoyer against the Cincinnati Bengals. It's something we could all kind of figure was coming after Brian Hoyer's performance against the Indianapolis Colts and his performance over the past four games, one touchdown, eight interceptions, completing less than 50% of his passes. So we're clearly, you know, Hoyer was on a very short leash when they decided to go with him Wednesday last week. Is Johnny Manziel going to be under, you know, on a similarly short leash? Is this something that could be a one-week thing? Does Brian Hoyer have a chance to shot at starting again in Cleveland, or is this Johnny's show right now?
Yeah, you've got to commit to this kid now.
Yeah.
I mean, you make this move and you put it off as long as you could. And I don't know that it's going to work. I tend to think it won't, but you have to look at this kid at this point. Brian Hoyer, his first, what he did last year coupled with his first five starts this year, if you considered that a half season, if he had maintained anything close to that pace, he would be absolutely still the quarterback of this team.
Mm-hmm.
He would be setting up to be a guy who could negotiate off of an Andy Dalton or a Colin Kaepernick type contract, because he was on pace at one point. You know, he hadn't thrown an interception all year. He had thrown like seven or eight touchdown passes. He was on pace for over 4,000 yards, and he was throwing the ball to nobody. I mean, it was Hawkins in the slot, and that was it. Their outside receivers were Miles Austin and like the Travis Benjamin or whoever the hell else they threw out. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, nothing.
Yeah, right.
So, and he couldn't sustain that, not even close, unfortunately for him. And, you know, what, one touchdown, eight interceptions in the last month. So that'll do it. And it's not all him, and Johnny Manziel is quickly going to find out. It's not all just Brian Hoyer not being as accurate as he hoped. They're, you know, third-string center. Running game's dried up. Still don't really have any options. Josh Gordon's trying hard, but he's not game ready. I mean,
he's not there yet.
No, he's not. And so, you know, and there's going to be a natural tendency, you know, what Johnny did with Mike Evans is throw it up for grabs. And frankly, that's what Hoyer was doing, and it got him into trouble. And you become very predictable, and defenses in this league will pick up on that pretty quickly, and that's where the turnovers come from. So
absolutely.
I think the one thing Johnny will do is invigorate that run game. It'll be a new look. Kyle Shanahan knows how to run that read option stuff very well. Because of Johnny's innate and athletic ability and his ability to pitch the ball, is he going to hold it? Is he going to pitch it? The option, all that stuff. It has to spark that offense a little bit. And they become a more difficult team to defend. But how often is he a double agent? How can he really read defenses? Does he trust his arm too much? How steep is the learning curve? I think it's going to be pretty steep.
You know, I think he has a really good chance this week against the Cincinnati Bengals just because this game's in Cleveland, so that helps. I think the Bengals' defense in particular is susceptible to a quarterback of Manziel's style. They're not really bringing a lot of pressure this year. They've got a few guys banged up in the secondary. This does present kind of a better situation for Manziel, where he could look pretty good against the Bengals, but that doesn't necessarily mean that for the final two games he's going to be able to harness that. But I think this matchup does suit him, that he could have a game better than perhaps Brian Hoyer could have here. But I do wonder if he's, you know, has one good week and then two just, well, this, you know, this is clearly a rookie quarterback kind of weeks.
I think the Browns have a chance this week, just especially with how well their defense has been playing lately.
That should
really keep them in it.
It'll be interesting. The Browns defense has struggled stopping the run, and I think Jackson just realizes, you know what, I was too cute by half the first time we played these guys in the wind and that horrible night in Cincinnati, and I'm having Andy Dalton throw sideline passes all over the place. Like, I think really if they simplify it, if it's Hill first down, Hill second down, screen to Geo third, like just keep it super simple, and I really think they can exert their will, and the Bengals' offensive line's been pretty good. The Browns have lost so many D linemen through the course of the year, and I think this is a game where Geno Atkins looks like Geno Atkins too. I mean, he should against the interior of that defensive line, and that's the thing. If they can collapse things from inside, and Manziel can't, you know, he doesn't have that A gap to just run free through.
Right.
Then all of a sudden you're forcing him to find other options, and he can't just take off up the middle. You know, that could present some problems. So we'll see. I mean, it's certainly an interesting game. People are going to want to see Johnny no matter what. Unfortunately for us at CBS, this was a cross-flex game, so Fox has this game, even though it's two AFC teams, but what are you going to do? The Bengals are an interesting team. I mean, I feel like I'm like Lucy and Charlie Brown with them. Like, that ball's sitting there, and I'm like, and you start to believe that they're going to kick it through the uprights, you know, and then she pulls it away. And you end up on your ass, and you're like, why did I fall for that again? You know, every time I think that they turn the corner, they just can't get over the hump. And I don't know now, man. They lose this game, they're done. I mean, they lose this game, they're done. What, because they got Denver and Pittsburgh after this?
Yeah. It's a tough
They've
got
to get to 10. That tie is going to end up biting them in the butt. They have to get to 10 wins now, and I don't know if they can.
Yeah, when that tie went down, I just thought with the AFC being as tight as it was then, and it's, or AFC North as tight as it was then, as tight as it still is now, with, you know, only in division games in week 17, that, you know, that tie is going to be a huge problem. And then, you know, you bring up Andy Dalton. That first game with the Bengals against the Browns, Dalton was 10 of 33 for 86 yards, no touchdowns and 3 interceptions. It was the epitome of the worst that Andy Dalton is capable of playing, and you're right. I mean, they had him throw all over the place. A, not his strong suit anyway. B, you can run on this Browns defense. So you kind of we've seen Andy Dalton play well. You know, like you said, I mean, there's these good weeks, and then there's a very low week for the Bengals. And I just feel like any week it could go either way, and a lot of that has to do with Dalton.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because, you know, that I love AJ against Hayden. That's such a good matchup. I mean, I love just watching those two square off. But, I mean, Hayden, you know, when he's on his game, he can take pretty much anybody away. And I would really be trying to get back to basics and just try to beat them up at the line of scrimmage and try to win this game ugly, not ask Dalton to do too much. And, and try to rely on your run game. But I don't know. Sometimes coordinators, man, you know, they look at some of these games as auditions, you know, and they want to show how smart they are and get noticed and try to be in the hunt for head coaching jobs. And, boy, I mean, that can lead to problems. I think this is a KISS game. Keep it simple, stupid.
I agree. Yeah, both sides have been trying to get a little too cute with things, especially with Josh Gordon coming back. Just, you know, Hoyer, what, those first two games threw to Gordon 29 times. It's like no quarterback can connect or lock onto a receiver like that over a two-week span. I don't care who the quarterback or the receiver is, because everyone knows where the ball's going.
Yeah, and they got away from Hawkins. I mean, Hawkins was a guy who, for most of the year, averaged 9 targets a game. And if you take out the first Pittsburgh game where he got hurt early and only had 2 passes thrown to him, he was over, like, he was like 10.3 targets a game. Since Gordon's come back, he's down to about 3.5. I think he's got 12 targets and 13 targets total in 3 games. And that slot stuff was really what was moving the chains for them. And that was when they didn't have an outside receiver. So you think, wow, they're finding an outside receiver. Like, maybe the interior really opens up. I mean, not having Cameron all year is hurt. I mean, it's amazing that the AFC being as decent as it is, it's truly amazing that the Browns have the record they have, given, you know, the lack of personnel.
Sure, and if they don't win any more games to close out the season, 7-9 is not a bad record for a Cleveland Browns team right now. I mean, that's clear improvement.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they can get to 8-8. They have one left with Carolina. We'll see, again, we don't know if Cam's going to play, well, yada, yada, yada. But, yeah, I mean, a 500 season would be a sign of respect. But I wonder if they better have a really good offseason. Because the schedule, look, they're not going to get the AFC North. I'm sorry, they're not going to get the AFC South and the NFC South next year.
No.
Like, they're just not, because they got them this year. So schedule's definitely going to be tougher next year for all these teams. I mean, trust me, this division, we're not going to be in December next year saying, well, it's amazing, everyone in this division is 2 games over 500. No, it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Switching gears to coaching situations, obviously, even before this season started, a lot of talks about, you know, 49ers and Jim Harbaugh and Harbaugh's future there, and he versus Trent Baalke and him versus the locker room. Rex Ryan, obviously head coach of a 2-11 team. He's been on thin ice for a while. Now Jay Gruden in Washington. He also seems like he's in a bad situation. What do you foresee happening for these coaches? Let's start with Jim Harbaugh. Is he going to Michigan?
everything I've heard is he's not interested in that job. His family has pretty strong ties to Brady Hoke, and he's got options at the pro game. Michigan's not going to pay a coach $8 million a year.
Right.
His wife's not really interested in raising her kids in Ann Arbor. I don't see that happening for multiple levels. In fact, if you made me handicap that one right now, I've heard the guy they want is Les Miles. They're not going to get him. I think Greg Schiano could be the guy who ends up getting that job when it's all said and done.
Yikes.
You know, what Harbaugh does like is he likes the Bay Area, and he likes living where he's living, and he likes Derek Carr, and Mark Davis will give him $8 million a year, no questions asked. So that's, you know, he's coached for the Raiders before. He obviously has Raiders ties. So that's going to be in play. Stephen Ross tried to hire him in the past. I don't know if you saw the Miami game over the weekend, but it's basically a home playoff game.
Yeah.
And there was nobody there. And the people who were there were Ravens fans.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, you're a businessman. You're running a business. They've been playing what amount to playoff games in December for 2 straight years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, if a bear pees in the forest and nobody smells or whatever, you know what I mean? Or whatever.
Exactly.
A tree falls
nobody's
in the forest
attention
and no one hears
there.
It doesn't make a sound. So he's trying to get Super Bowls back there. He's trying to get, if not a new stadium, major upgrades to a stadium. He's trying to compete with South Beach and have some sizzle. He's had no one there he can sell. Like, even if Joe Philbin got to the playoffs and they had a home playoff game and it didn't sell out, like, he's got decisions to make there. So I think he'll be a player for Harbaugh. Woody Johnson's certainly capable of anything. Arthur Blank, yeah, I know they're still kind of in this thing, but my goodness, they're not a tough team at all. They're not physical. The defense is a joke. Like, you know, you bring a Harbaugh in there, a no-nonsense guy who wants to run the hell out of the football and a bit of a throwback. He's also got to sell PSLs, an environment where people, A, aren't used to spending big money on pro sports, B, would probably rather watch college sports, and C, now I got to give you money just for the right to give you more money to help you build this stadium and go to games, right? Like, good luck with that, you know? So he's, you know, I'm told he is looking to make a splash. So there'll be enough owners who are desperate enough to do something that, that Harbaugh will have options. I mean, I think Mike Smith, again, if he gets in the playoffs, maybe he keeps his job, but it, it does not look likely right now. Miami, I think, very well can make a change. Buffalo, I don't think the coach and the GM are back. Maybe it's one or the other. Maybe both are gone. They, anytime you've got a new owner who comes in, chance, generally you spent, like this guy just spent $1.3 billion for this team that's been 6-10 for like the last 30 years.
Right.
And they don't have a stadium, right? He spent $1.3 billion and he's got to try to build his own stadium. So I don't think he's just going to sit on his hands and say, yeah, you know, that was pretty good. Yeah, that E.J. Manuel thing and that Sammy Watkins trade and us not having a first-round pick next year. Yeah, yeah, let's just stay on this course. So it's not usually how it works. Chicago, they better show some sign of life down the stretch. You know, it's not the Hallis way to blow everything up, and they probably at the end will be too cheap to do it. But certainly people there are on notice and are concerned and feel like they're coaching for their lives. We know that Oakland's going to hire a new head coach. It's just a matter of who it is.
Right.
You know, I think there'll be 7 or 8 coaching changes when it's all said and done. And I think there'll be 5 or 6 GM coaching changes. I'm sorry, GM changes.
You know, I think with Harbaugh, I mean, if he wants to make a splash, I mean, obviously going to Oakland is a good way to do it just because you can kind of rile up your former 49ers fan base. The Jets, you know, I see the Jets as an intriguing possibility for Harbaugh, but then do you really want to go from Rex Ryan to Jim Harbaugh? Just knowing what was going on in the media circus that can ensue just from Rex Ryan, and then you bring in Jim Harbaugh to replace him. I mean, wouldn't that be just going, you know, going from something crazy to something equally as crazy?
Well, I think that's how Woody Johnson competes, though. He can't compete with the Giants in terms of rings. He can't compete with the Giants in terms of prestige. He can't compete with the Giants in terms of the depth of the fan base. He's kind of the redheaded stepchild. So how's he going to compete? He competes on the back pages of the Post and the Daily News. He competes in the gossip pages. I mean, that's how they're kind of relevant. That's sort of who they are, and at least they're being talked about. Now, he's got issues, too, with the PSLs and that stadium not being completely full and him never really being able to sell the PSLs to the degree that the Giants did. Like, I don't think they even sell like upper deck PSLs for the Jets, you know, because they couldn't. You know, I think it's like 2/3 of the stadium they do sell them for, but the rest they really couldn't. So I don't think he'd be averse to Harbaugh at all. I mean, they'd be interesting. They'd be on national television. You know, people would want to check out the press conferences. And even if you lose, you know, at least you're sort of not boring.
Good point.
But you know, I mean, I don't know that Harbaugh wants to be in New York. I don't know if that's his scene. I don't know if the family wants to move all the way across the country. If I'm handicapping that thing right now, I think the Raiders, as long as Mark Davis comes correct and everything I've heard leads me to believe he will. Now, you know, maybe the Yorks decide, hey, we don't want to trade him there because it is in our backyard and we're going to have to deal with this all the time and this or that. But I also don't think there's going to be multiple teams throwing draft picks at him either because everyone knows it's an untenable situation. So if they get too cute, people will just say, all right, fine, we'll just wait. Because there's no way you're bringing him back. So if you want to drag this out, drag it out.
You're
going to need to hire your new coach. Now, to which they would say, well, our new coach is probably already on staff, so nanny, nanny, boo-boo. So, I mean, I guess it could become some kind of a weird waiting game. But sure. I tend to think it won't. And, look, if there's people in the Bay Area right now who feel like if Seattle completely embarrasses them, maybe they fire Harbaugh in season the way they did Singletary, which to me would be just petty and ugly. Like, I don't care what's been going on there forever. It takes two to tango. It's
not
all Harbaugh.
That would be so ugly.
And
it'd be so ugly. Like all the laundry
there.
That's been aired, all the laundry that's been aired the past few months, it would just intensify so much.
3 straight championship games, right? I mean, he came the first year. He comes a fumbled punt away from probably going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The second year, he comes a pass interference call away from winning a Super Bowl. Last year, he comes a Michael Crabtree, Richard Sherman play away from possibly going back to the Super Bowl. I mean, if you were to fire a guy like that in season, it would just be, I mean, I just think it would be classless. But I don't know. I mean, people are openly wondering about it out there because that's how bad things are.
That's crazy. That would be crazy. I wouldn't put it past this season.
That'd be the worst firing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, in this league, who knows? But that would be, wow. I think that would be ugly. But that's who they were before he got there. I mean, that's what what happened to Singletary. And, you know, they had been miserable forever. They didn't have a new stadium then. And, you know, they had issues connecting to their fans then. And they had issues connecting to their alumni. And a lot of guys, Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, Steve Young, didn't really want to be around that franchise or be associated with it at that point. And Harbaugh, you know, in his own weird way, has restored a lot of that. And, look, he has his faults like everybody else. But and he's never going to be a guy who stays anywhere 10 years. Like, that's just not how he's wired, and that's not how it's going to work. But he won more games in 3 years than I think they had the previous 7 or 8 combined.
Right.
Ain't nothing to scoff at.
No.
So where does this leave Rex Ryan? Because, you know, for all the troubles and issues that he's had with the Jets, some of his doing, some of the GM's doing, the quarterback situation that's been so untenable, he's still a very sharp defensive mind. I think that he has a lot that he can contribute to some other team. But do you think that he's going to be in the head coaching discussion at least this offseason, or do you think he's going to have to maybe reestablish himself as an effective D coordinator somewhere before he can get back into that head coaching?
No, he won't. I don't see him being a D coordinator. I mean, he's still calling the X's and O's there. I mean, he was when Petten was there, and then when Petten left, he took it back even more and was even more micromanaged. I mean, everybody knows that's his defense. I mean, that his skill set there speaks for itself, and he won't have to prove anything to anybody in that regard. It's just going to be a matter of, like I'll go back to Stephen Ross. If he misses on Harbaugh, Rex is pretty sexy. You know, Rex you can sell. Rex is going to create some sizzle. You know, Rex is going to put you more on the national landscape. Rex will have no problem hobnobbing with J-Lo or whatever. You know, Rex is a good dude. I mean, he's a fun dude. He can get in anywhere and kind of find his niche. And, you know, he can help you. I mean, Rex used to do cold calls to fans for the Jets and, you know, record messages about buying season tickets and everything. So he'll go all in. So, but even saying all that, I talk to a lot of people who know him well who say, look, somebody wants to give him $2.5-3 million to talk about football for a year and let him recharge his batteries and let him go see his son play, you know, at Clemson every weekend or whatever. Like, that there's a lot of allure to that as well. He's been in a cauldron. I mean, I don't know how he does it. I would have choked people out long ago if I was coaching that team. I mean, just some of the questions he's asked on a daily basis and some of the things that are written. So, you know, him kind of detoxing from that for – you know, 9 to 12 months wouldn't be the worst thing in the world either. But, you know, money talks. And if Stephen Ross made him an offer he can't refuse, they've got pretty good defensive personnel there. It's already in the division. He knows them pretty well. I think there's a couple of scenarios that could make sense. But I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him commentating for a year and then kind of reassessing.
Moving on to Washington and Jay Gruden, it was kind of a questionable hire, in my opinion, when it first happened. You know, I didn't really see, especially the situation. The situation just never seemed like it would be one where Jay Gruden could ever thrive as a head coach, being pulled in so many different directions. The situation with whatever privileges the owner's giving the quarterback, all kinds of problems there. And now, you know, he's trying really hard to distance himself from RG3 and from all of that in hopes of saving his job. But I don't think there's a way to salvage it, because he doesn't seem like he's pretty happy doing this job for that team now either.
Well, he's got 20 million more reasons to be happy about it.
Yeah, that's true.
And not too many first-time head coaches get a big boy contract like him. And in part is because his agents did a tremendous job. He's got financial insulation from this. So people can write what they want to write and say what they want to say, and that's all fine. But he's this isn't a Jim Zorn contract. You know, this isn't a Mark Trestman contract. This is not like an entry-level contract. It's a serious financial commitment. And after Dan Snyder just gave Mike Shanahan $7.5 million to walk, I don't think he's got another 20 to hand to a coach to get out of the building. And it doesn't make any sense. And he can't get – the reason he had to pay Jay Gruden like an experienced head coach and had to give him 5 guaranteed years is because no one wants the damn job.
No, no one wants that job.
No one succeeded there because it's a black hole. You have no chance. They're set up to fail. They have no checks and balances. They don't have a real general manager. The owner is involved in everything. The owner can't help but pollute the locker room because he loves certain guys, and the way he manifests his love for them makes everybody else jealous and makes everybody else wonder and creates the haves and the have-nots and creates a toxic atmosphere where guys are rooting against each other instead of for each other, because there's one set of rules for this couple of dudes and everybody else, like, he don't care. It's been that way forever, and
yeah.
I don't know that it'll ever change. So, I mean, he's not firing Jay Gruden. He's not. Now, will Jay Gruden have to suck up having RG3 as a $3 million backup quarterback next year? Maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jay's also not in a position where he can bang kick the guy's office door open and bang on his desk and say it's either him or me. You know, and I don't think that's how it's going to be. But, look, no one's forced him to play RG3 to this point. He's proven that I'll sit the kid, and he doesn't want him there. So, you know, if he's on the roster, great. He'll be the highest paid number three quarterback in the history of the NFL. So I don't anticipate them actually firing Jay. And again, if they fire Jay, who's taking that job?
Oh, my.
I mean,
right.
Who's taking that job? Like, who's going there?
Overpay somebody else.
It can't happen.
Well, it also then, you know, with this situation, with how much money, how much, you know, Gruden's been guaranteed here, he's like kind of the perfect man for the job. I mean, he has stepped up and he's like, you know, you're not going to force me to play RG3. But at the same time, Dan Snyder's kind of relax some of those privileges that he was giving RG3 about having his family around the facilities and all of that. But, you know, like Jay Gruden, he's kind of the perfect coach for a guy like Dan Snyder, because you can't have a guy, you can't have a Jim Harbaugh. And I mean, it was bad enough having a Mike Shanahan trying to deal with Dan Snyder and those two butting heads. So you have to have a guy like Jay Gruden who, you know, he's got a decent football mind. He comes, you know, he did all right with Andy Dalton in Cincinnati and all of
yeah.
that. His last name's Gruden. you know, but
right.
like
that doesn't hurt.
Yeah, but there's no way that like John Gruden would have accepted this job, but like Jay would, you know?
Right, right. I mean, it's been a mess there forever, again, I just tend to think it'll always be a mess, and you got to go in there. You can't go with blinders on. You got to go in there having knowledge of the past and understanding that that's probably a decent indicator of the future. Mm-hmm. And this leopard hasn't changed his spots and probably won't change his spots. So, you know, you try to make the best of it. But their problem is the personnel side is a complete just. I mean, it's
yeah.
The emperor has no clothes there.
Right.
And, you know, until that changes and until you actually have a model where there's a strong independent GM with a strong independent coach. Mm-hmm. And one guy manages the shop, what do we need to do to win this week? And the other guy manages the next 2 to 5 years of the organization. Until that's in place, and both, you know, have a fair amount of power, but the GM controls, you know, who's on the 53 and the coach determines who's on the 45,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to win. And they've never been set up that way since Snyder's there. I don't think it's any fun for him. Unless it's set up the way it is now with a faux GM who's basically a puppet for him to get whatever he wants, and a coach who either A, is really inexperienced and has never done it before, or
right.
B, has too much power, like Gibbs yep. and Shanahan, where they control everything, and they're not personnel guys, and they're not evaluators, and they're older dudes trying to win in the moment. And you can't have that paradigm, because it's not going to work, because Joe Gibbs, the GM, and Joe Gibbs, the coach, were both always just worried about winning this year. There was no
right.
one saying, wait a minute, how's that going to look in 2 years? How's that going to look in 18 months? How's that going to look in 9 months? And the same thing with Shanahan. He wanted to come back. He wanted to win right away, make Kyle the head coach. He becomes the Bill Parcells football czar, making $7 million a year to do whatever he wants. And we take over the building. I mean, that was what it was supposed to be.
Right.
So that's why you saw the Donovan McNabb move, and then Beck and Grossman, and then – let's trade 900 picks for RG3. And
yep.
there's nobody on the other side saying, wait a minute, when
is
you're gone
smart?
Back to, you know, Cabo in 18 months, we're stuck holding the freight.
Right. And I feel pretty bad for RG3 and all this. You know, there's that story, he's punting footballs to himself after practice, and like one of the most saddest like NFL-related mental images I've had in a while. And I mean, he's not completely blameless in all
no.
of this. But he's also not completely to blame for all of this either. I mean, it starts with Dan Snyder. You know, it's connected also to the fact that with Dan Snyder giving him all this preferential treatment, you've got RG3 already pitted against his teammates, pitted against Mike Shanahan, who's a coach that RG3 admired until he ended up working with him and realized on principle Shanahan kind of loathed him a little.
Yeah.
And he's kind of stuck up in all of this. And it didn't help that, you know, Dr. James Andrews is Washington's doctor, and he's sitting there saying, no, go ahead, play RG3. Your knee will be fine on this terrible field. You know, you have all of these things coming together. And while RG3 is certainly a component of a problem here, I mean, he's kind of getting screwed over ultimately more than anybody involved in this situation. Look, right now,
everybody made money off of RG3. I mean, he made some money, but not like everybody else. I mean, he's a cottage industry, and you know, his dad. I mean, the dad said stupid stuff. I mean, everybody around him. There were no adults in the room, and he was a kid. He comes into this. He's 21, 22. He's still a kid. You've got Adidas and all the advertising campaigns all in for week one. Well, yeah, then of course he's going to push to play in week one. And you know, as you said, Andrews, however he may or may not be compromised by the various hats he wears, you've got no one putting a decent field of play in place. You've got there's a leadership void there. The GM isn't really a GM. The owner controls everything. I mean, you could go on and on and on. Look, it's not just RG3. I mean, he's symptomatic of a larger problem. I mean, you know, it was Patrick Ramsey, you know, first round pick. No one protecting him. Steve Spurrier trying to run his SEC, you know, run and shoot stuff with no real protection schemes, and gets him killed. And then it's Joe Gibbs. Well, let's just go. We're going to draft Jason Campbell because he reminds me of Doug Williams. And then he leaves. So then it's like Jim Zorn. Well, I'm going to turn Jason Campbell, who's like 6'5" with a huge hitch in his giddy up, who was drafted to be Doug Williams' vertical downfield passer with a power run game, and I'm going to turn him into a West Coast guy.
Yeah.
And we're going to throw 75% of our stuff 5 to 15 yards, and he's going to run three-step drops and be a precision passer, even with this big hitch in his giddy up. You know what I mean? It's like, what is even going on here?
Right.
You know? And the only reason he ended up with Zorn is because nobody else wanted the job. I mean, it's just like, so it's not about the quarterback there. It's about a leadership vacuum, and it's about a way of doing football business that's never worked. It works in the business side of football, but in terms of a football product and a football entity and devising a winning culture and sustaining any sort of positive momentum, that they've been absolutely unable to do that.
And finally, so this Los Angeles thing, it's becoming more of a foregone conclusion every time anybody brings it up. Right now, Oakland Raiders, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams are the front runners to move to Los Angeles. You know, obviously the Raiders and the Rams, they've been kind of connected to L.A. for a while. Obviously, both of them have been L.A. franchises at one point. The Chargers are a team that I've heard, you know, you hear a little bit every year. It's been a few years now where the Chargers kind of have waning fan support in San Diego, that they might actually be the prime candidate for L.A. What do you think is going to end up playing out, and when do you think we're going to see this Los Angeles franchise?
Somebody there next year, I believe. There's still a lot of sort of behind-the-scenes machinations and things to go that still need to play out, but I think somebody's there next year. You got three teams that are essentially free agents. You've got two teams that desperately want to move, which is Oakland and St. Louis, and would already have declared their intent to move if the league weren't telling them, no, you can't. And you've got another one in Dean Spanos who doesn't want to move, but if somebody else is coming into basically my backyard and is going to, you know, take away my ability to make what I can here, then I better be willing to do the same, you know, otherwise shame on me. So he's, you know, I think all things being equal, he would like to get a stadium in San Diego, but that's been going on for 10 years and it's not going to happen. I mean, it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. And the baseball team got theirs and I think they're done building stadiums there. And I don't blame them for that either. I mean, municipalities need to figure out how to best spend their money and subsidizing billionaires probably isn't the way to go, but you know, it happens because they get leveraged and they get scared and what have you. So somebody's going to be there. There's too much intent and too much desire. Somebody's going to be playing home games in the Rose Bowl next year. In fact, you made me handicap it. I still think it'll be St. Louis. And I think Mark Davis is the perfect second team in. I don't think there aren't many people in the league office who feel like that ownership group is presently constituted, has the wherewithal to truly develop a stadium, develop the area around the stadium, understand all the marketing and branding and all the nuanced partnerships and everything that goes into that. But could he be brought in as the second man in because they're adamant that it's, if there's one team, then there's two? Absolutely. So it comes down to who's first, Spanos or Kroenke. Kroenke already owns land there. Kroenke's got the house in Malibu. Kroenke's been working at this for a long time, trying to make this happen. And he's not afraid to ruffle feathers to get what he wants. And Dean Spanos would rather just kind of go with the flow. So, you know, I wonder if – and look, and in the end, that could work against Kroenke as much as it works for him.
Right.
But I think the Rams get there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Mark Davis in particular, you don't really say marketing and development.
No.
Not so much. He's not so much like his
say,
dad.
Say, who's that guy's barber?
Yeah, he's like, who's the guy with the haircut?
it's just not, you know, that's sort of not his thing. He was kind of born into this, and, and he's trying to do what he can do, and he's got an incredibly untenable situation there. With that OCO Coliseum and it being the dump that it is, and he doesn't have a lot of options. I mean, when you're flirting with San Antonio, you know what I mean? That you're desperate. I mean, that reeks of desperation. And that's not a knock on him. That's the situation as it stands. And he's trying to engender leverage and you know, wherever he can and try to set himself up for some sort of palatable deal somewhere. But I just can't imagine the NFL. The Raiders have been there before twice. You know, I just can't imagine that they get, you know, I won't say first dibs because it's kind of last dibs. I mean, this is it. It's either, you know, if this doesn't make it in L.A. now, it's never happening again. So I don't think he gets last crack at this market.
Well, thank you so much, Jason, for joining us this evening. We really appreciate it. Before we let you go, in case any of our listeners don't know where to find you around the internets and such, please let them know where they can find you.
Yeah, on Twitter, just at Jason Lockenfor. It's a lot of vowels, but trust me, it's phonetically just like it sounds. So it's not
worth it.
Worth
every
vowel.
I'm tired
to spell it for you, though. And then obviously on CBSSports.com, for the most part, that's where most of my stuff ends up at one point or another. So, no, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Okay. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Yeah, have a great night.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And a huge thank you again to CBS Sports NFL insider Jason Lockenfora for joining us this week.
Yeah, it was great stuff.
Great stuff. Always informative. He obviously has his finger on the pulse of everything going on in the NFL, which is super helpful considering this has been...
And he's ready and willing to share all that information with an enthusiastic zeal.
Yes. And and there's a lot of information going on, a lot of stuff to process in a very hectic 2014 season. This is another one of the more hectic weeks. So big thanks to Jason Lockenfora for joining us. Now
absolutely.
It's time for Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
For week 15. So let's start, of course, with Thursday night football. This should be a good one. Arizona Cardinals at the St. Louis Rams. St. Louis, two straight weeks of putting up shutouts against their opponents.
Granted, it was Oakland and Washington, but still, impressive. Yeah.
Impressive. I mean, Oakland can score points.
True.
Washington has scored points. This is two straight shutouts in a row. I like what's going on with the St. Louis defense right now. The offense is starting to come together a little bit, too. I like the Rams on Thursday night. I think the home team always has advantage in these games, and it's a big divisional matchup. Arizona, no slouch themselves, but I do like St. Louis to get the advantage in this game.
Yeah, I think it, somebody please, you know, let me know if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that this Rams turnaround, not turnaround even, but like the kind of the boost in what how they've been playing is somewhat tied to them getting Chris Long back a few weeks ago. I believe he came back a few weeks ago, and then they've been playing lights out since then. And so yeah, I think I definitely like a lot of what's going on there. Sean Hill's just a measured presence at the quarterback position. He's just very efficient, and I've always liked Sean Hill, or for years and years I have certainly. And I think that they can get it done at home against this this Arizona squad, who we know is tough. I think I like the Rams here in this situation.
Moving on to Sunday, the Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Atlanta to take on the Falcons, the 5-8 division-leading, NFC South division-leading Atlanta Falcons. The Pittsburgh Steelers went to Cincinnati and took care of business, as they're wont to do there. I believe they're now 13-3 since the year 2000 in Cincinnati, 42-21. And so that's why I think Pittsburgh is going to go to Atlanta and not win this game. They've lost to the Jets this year. They've lost to the Buccaneers. They lost to the Saints after coming off of their bye week. So I just don't feel like I don't feel very confident in them going to Atlanta and getting out of there with a win, especially if Julio Jones plays. He's been just out of control these past couple of weeks. The Steelers secondary can't cover anybody. So I am going to go with Atlanta because that's just how the Steelers roll this year.
Yeah, obviously Julio Jones's health is of huge importance to Atlanta, especially, I mean, like you said, he's been uncoverable for the last couple of weeks now, just playing out of his mind and keeping, you know, Matt Ryan looking like a viable quarterback. And you said it. I mean, this Pittsburgh team has set a precedent for playing down against inferior opponents.
Yes.
And just based on what we've seen out of their play throughout the year, throughout the season, depending on who they've played, you know, Atlanta certainly qualifies as a down opponent here.
Right.
And you're going to their house, and they still do have a passing attack. That Steelers secondary has been rough. I think I'm with you. I think I like Atlanta in this situation.
Washington at the New York Giants, an NFC East matchup. I'm going to go with the New York Giants here. Obviously, the Giants have been very up and down this season. Not a very good year for Eli Manning. This year could cost Tom Coughlin his job. But things are dysfunctional in Washington. We discussed it with Jason LaConfora. They found a little bit of stability at quarterback with Colt McCoy, but not enough. I don't think this team is going to be equipped mentally or physically to go on the road and beat the Giants, even though the Giants aren't a terrible, threat to them this week.
Yeah, NFC East caveats apply.
Sure.
But
less so this year than in others, I would say.
True. But still, really where I'm going with that is just, the Giants have that ability to win and lose games that you don't expect. So, given all that, I like them in this situation at home. I think they should. Washington's kind of a mess right now. And although they've gotten some decent play out of McCoy since he's been in there, and their D can play decently at times in a divisional game, all that, yes, I still like the Giants in this situation.
Next up, Miami Dolphins are at the New England Patriots. If this was the other way around, I would give Miami more of a chance. I do like what Miami's putting together on defense. The offense looking much better, Ryan Tannehill putting it together, but they're going to New England. It's a tough place to play, especially this time of year. The Patriots are pretty hot right now. I don't see them losing ground to the Dolphins in the AFC East. I think this is a definite Patriots win in my eyes.
I'd chalk this one up as retribution from that first week. Dolphins, unless I'm mistaken, I'm pretty sure that the Dolphins didn't win the first week. Oh, well.
I'm not sure. I don't think, maybe.
It was in Miami the first week, and I remember they played terribly. The offensive line, Tom Brady was.
Oh, yeah, New England did lose 33-20.
Yeah, there you go. That early season Tom Brady stuff that was going on, and this is a whole different team right now, and it's in New England. Yeah, I'm on the Patriots in this one.
Oakland Raiders at Kansas City Chiefs. Oakland coming off of a big win over the San Francisco 49ers, basically a nail in that their season's coffin. Two wins for the Raiders right now. However, they're among a number of two-win teams vying for the number one draft pick next year. I don't think they're going to get their third win by going to Kansas City this week. Kansas City's a tough out, of course, especially in Kansas City at Arrowhead. You know, Oakland's got two wins, and while they've scrapped, I would say that they're a scrappy team. They got a scrappy offense. They got some scrappy guys on defense as well, but I like the Chiefs here.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, last 5 or 6 weeks or so, we've seen the Raiders show some life. They've put a couple victories together. Their offense is playing better even in losses, things like that. So there's, you know, I'd say some reason for optimism for future things, at least for some of the guys they have on the team there in Oakland. But this is just a bad matchup for them, having to go to Kansas City. Kansas City's just a solid team. They're solid to pretty good. And being at home, I think the Raiders are going to struggle here. Or the Chiefs being home, I think the Raiders are going to struggle.
Next up, Houston Texans at Indianapolis Colts. I'm kind of bummed this game isn't in primetime because I love watching J.J. Watt versus Andrew Luck. It's the premier matchup in the NFL
right now.
It's
tough to focus on him when there's 8 games going on or whatever.
I like the Colts here. I mean, we saw last week the Cleveland Browns defense completely harassed Andrew Luck. They sacked him 3 times, hit him a dozen more, held him to 5.5 yards per pass. Very good defensive performance, and that's something that maybe the Texans could build off of, especially when you've got a guy like J.J. Watt. But I don't know. I mean, Indianapolis, they're a clear playoff contender. Andrew Luck, one of the premier quarterbacks in the league. I think that Indianapolis can pull this one off, but I think it's going to be a close game until late in it.
Yeah, the Texans have got some things going lately. Fitzpatrick's been playing pretty well since he's got back in there. J.J. Watt obviously is, you know, a one-man wrecking machine, and the main reason I think that it's tough to argue that he's not the main reason that they are where they are right now. But you know, this is the Colts at home against a divisional opponent. I don't see them losing this game.
Jacksonville Jaguars travel to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. Sometimes this matchup can go sour for Baltimore, but I don't think that's going to be the case this week. The Ravens' biggest weakness right now is in the secondary. They just brought on Antoine Kaysan to help boost the cornerback position there. But there's not a lot of – I'm not really afraid of Jacksonville's passing attack when it's primarily a Marquise Lee affair and a little bit of Allen Hurns and not much else. Denard Robinson, of course, the Jacksonville running back, is done for the year with a foot sprain. So that doesn't help Jacksonville's chances at all. I like Baltimore a lot here. You know, I think this is a time where the secondary is not going to be a liability, and if Torrey Smith is still out because of his knee injury, I don't think that they'll miss him too much either in a win.
Yeah, this is a tough one for the Jags, having to go on the road, you know, play this Ravens team, especially losing Denard, who was the only one, you know, of their backs that showed much ability to do much of anything this year.
Right.
I do like some of the younger receivers they have there, you know, going against that secondary, maybe you can see some trouble there or something, or maybe they'll make it a little more interesting than otherwise it would be, but this should be a Ravens win.
Green Bay Packers at the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo, of course, has that impressive defense that could cause a few problems for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers on Sunday, though I don't expect it to be that much of a problem where the Packers cannot win. Aaron Rodgers is clearly the league's premier quarterback this season, and I don't think that he's going to have that much trouble against Buffalo. And at the same time, I don't see Buffalo having the offensive weaponry to score enough points to keep this game close or to win. So I'm going to go with the Packers.
Yeah, I think the Bills have been one of the better defenses in the league this year, and certainly against the run, which has become more and more a part of the Packers' offensive plan over the last year or so. And, you know, they're at the Bills. They're at the Bills. They should bring it.
Bills should be suffocating that run game, and they should be bringing some pressure.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see that good defense against this Packer offense that's going right now. But it's humming so well for Rodgers and those guys. I have a hard time finding a way to pick against them. So I'm going to take the Packers here.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Carolina Panthers. Buccaneers, again, another two-win team. Carolina with four wins in the NFC South. Obviously, no Cam Newton after his car accident on Tuesday. It'll be Derek Anderson starting. But as Jason Lockenfora, as we discussed with him, Derek Anderson started earlier this season against Tampa Bay.
It was week one.
In week one, while Cam Newton was out, and did just fine. And I expect a similar performance, especially with a home field advantage for Mr. Anderson. Tampa Bay has two wins for a reason. Carolina's not doing well either. They've got four wins. But Jonathan Stewart's starting to, you know, he's back. He's running well. I do like Derek Anderson. I think Derek Anderson actually might provide a bigger boost to the passing game than Cam Newton, even though Newton did have that very good game last week. I'm going to go with the Panthers.
Yeah, there's nothing to get excited about with the Buccaneers. There's not really a whole lot to get excited about with the Panthers right now. Agreed, you know, Derek Anderson pretty much carved him up in the first week. And, of course, his next opportunity to play is against him here at home. So, you know, all signs point to the Panthers should be able to take this game. Although I'm going to go with the Bucs because...
Think the Bucs are going to get a road win?
I'm giving... This is the NFC South whatever pick of the week.
Okay.
And that should read, NFC South whatever.
All right, and finally, closing out the early game slate on Sunday is the Cincinnati Bengals at the Cleveland Browns. Last time these two teams meet, Andy Dalton, 10 of 33, 86, and three interceptions to no touchdowns. Not a good outing. Should be a little bit better this week. They're going to probably focus on running the ball more. That's the biggest weakness for the Cleveland Browns defense. And, of course, you've got Johnny Manziel starting at quarterback in place of Brian Hoyer. There, with that, anything could happen. He could run for 140 yards. He could run for negative 10 yards. Who knows what's going to happen with that. I do like the Browns, though. I think the boost or the spark or whatever provided by Johnny Manziel will help that offense be more productive than it has been over the past 4 weeks with Hoyer. And I also think that maybe we're due for another bad Dalton. You know, we got to, you know,
it's been a few weeks of him playing well.
The division's on the line here. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of tough games ahead for the Bengals. They need this one to stay above water and stay away from keep the Steelers at bay a little bit here. But I think the Browns get this win.
Yeah, I'd have to say that I think.
I took the whole minute. Sorry. Next.
I'll be quick. No, I think this is an interesting matchup mainly because of. The issues you brought up with Dalton and his earlier performance, and potentially we could see something like that again. But it's mainly I just liked how the Browns defense looked real aggressive and was playing really well last week.
And defenses like that can ruin Andy Dalton's day.
For
sure.
And they're going to be fired up playing that divisional rival at home this time. They've already beat them. They got some confidence from that aspect. And we'll see what the kid can do. I think there's a chance that the kid can throw too many or make too many mistakes and potentially cost the Browns a game, but he also certainly can provide the kind of spark that the offense is needed to help them win it. So I'll take the Browns. I think this could go either way though.
Late afternoon slate is four games, starting with the New York Jets at the Tennessee Titans.
Ooh.
So
you want to say that again? Just to let
the
gravity.
The New York Jets at the Tennessee Titans in the quad box.
Battle to get to the third win.
I think that the Jets are going to get their third win. I think they're going to go on the road and they're going to get it. And here's why. Because they got a coach that has some passion right now. A two-win team. But he knows he's dead in the water. But he's Rex Ryan. And I feel like the Titans are just like, yeah, two wins, whatever. And I don't feel like the Jets are there yet. The quarterback position is screwed up. Rex Ryan is a lame duck, but I think that they can go on the road and get this win because the Titans are just more meh than the Jets are.
Yeah. I don't know. It's two 2-11 teams facing off in the second week of December. It sounds like two bad teams playing. I'm going to go with the home team, so I'll take the Titans. But, yeah, whatever.
This next game sort of makes up for that, though. Denver at San Diego. This All is right. going to be a fancy football game to watch. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be a good one, yeah.
Quarterbacks. I'm going to go with San Diego here because the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning have looked a little bit more mortal this year mm-hmm. than they have in seasons past, and especially last year. And San Diego knows how to get things done. Phillip Rivers is an efficient, talented quarterback. He's got a lot of good weapons at his disposal. I think this might be a big C.J. Anderson game. I think if they can get that under control, then everything else will kind of fall into place. I like the Chargers here. I like the home team.
Yeah, this should be a really good game. I can see this one going either way. I certainly can see, you know, Peyton leading the team in there. C.J. Anderson's been running really well. Peyton coming off a bad week. I mean, he had a terrible week last week.
Yeah, he did.
For him,
especially for him.
Right, and I kind of expect him to bounce back quite a bit. But the Chargers have been really good, especially at home. They've got some really good wins at home this year.
Yep.
And they're coming off a loss themselves. I don't know. I can see it going either way. I'll take the Chargers.
Next up, Minnesota Vikings are at the Detroit Lions. Teddy Bridgewater starting to get it together a little bit, making good connections with receiver Charles Johnson. Can't say the same for Cordarrelle Patterson. I like Detroit here, though, because it's, you know, there are good things about Minnesota. The defense obviously looks like a very Mike Zimmer defense. Bridgewater's, you know, slowly getting it together. He's a rookie. It's going to take some time. But I like Detroit. I mean, they're a ready-made, put-together, established team. Mm-hmm. And they're playing at home in a place where they're very comfortable, in a place where the crowd can get really loud, a place where they can mess with a rookie quarterback. So I'm going to go with the Lions.
Yeah, Lions at home here I think is probably a good bet. This Vikings team, I've liked them this year. I like Zimmer and what he's done up there. But, you know, the Lions defense has really turned into a pretty solid unit this year, despite injuries that have, you know, happened here and there. And their offense was dragging them down for a long time, and over the last couple games, we've seen them obviously play slightly worse defenses than previous, but in Chicago and Tampa the last two games. But I don't know, Minnesota's still a defense in progress and work in progress there, and I think that we'll continue to see Detroit get back to their offensive ways and continue to play pretty good defense. So I like the Lions here.
Next up, a game that's probably carried more weight about a year ago, San Francisco 49ers at the Seattle Seahawks. At this point, the Niners, they lost to Oakland in a dramatically bad fashion.
Yes.
Colin Kaepernick has clearly regressed as a quarterback. Jim Harbaugh has 1.5 feet out the door at this point, it appears. Seattle, by the way, they had some rough moments earlier in the season, but they're starting to put it all together now. And this is the right time of year to do it. I can't see a way right now that this 49ers team can go into Seattle and win. It's
no,
just not
I mean,
happening.
Even if the Niners were firing on all cylinders right now and didn't have some
so
of those
difficult
injuries that have been so bad for them this year, and you know, if they had everything going in their favor, this would be it'd be tough to call. I think I'd say it'd be a lot tougher to call than right now with the Seattle team playing as well as they are, and the Niners are just, you know, they're kind of a mess right now, and it's got to be tough to concentrate when, you know, every day there's discussion of where Harbaugh is going to coach next, and for months it's been the rift amongst him in the front office, and it's just, I think it's finally trickling down to the team, and it's just having an effect on everybody. So definitely Seattle here.
Sunday Night Football, of course, is in the NFC East because we can't go a week without Dallas in primetime. It's the Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys here because even though Tony Romo's dinged up, he's got the back pain, he's got broken ribs, he's been taking dangerous painkiller shots in order to maintain a level of comfort on the football field. I still like this injured Tony Romo more than what we've been seeing out of Mark Sanchez. And I like what Dallas does on defense more than I like what Philadelphia does on defense right now. I mean, Philadelphia's getting better, but I like Dallas's defense. I think they have the edge here, and while Philadelphia has the home field advantage and all of that, I think that Dallas, you know, it's prime time. It's something they're familiar with. It's a team they're familiar with. And I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I like the Eagles here. You know, you certainly made some good points. I definitely expect a good game.
No, it's going to be a competitive game.
Yeah, the Cowboys, you know, they've had a pretty good team this year. It's been a little bit hit or miss here and there, especially they were very strong, you know, several weeks ago. And it's been a little bit less, you know, less such over the last couple of weeks. But I expect them to come and bring it and play a pretty good game under the lights. But, you know, Philly at home in this situation with so much riding on it, I like them in this matchup.
Finally, Monday Night Football. Why on earth they couldn't just move Indianapolis and Houston into this
spot. If only they could flex into Monday nights at times, you know?
We've got New Orleans Saints, the 5-8 New Orleans Saints at the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Bears. New Orleans has not traveled well this season.
God, but it's the, you know, rock and a hard place here.
Yeah, the Bears haven't played well at home either. But this is a dome team coming to a cold city and a night game. And so for that reason, I'm going to go with the Bears. I could see this going either way, but I just decided to go with the weather and the home team here. So Chicago.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's mainly because I feel like the Bears
Saints should be better, but they're not.
The Bears have looked good in a couple small spots this year, you know, and they're few and far
right,
between.
Right, and now Brandon Marshall's on IR.
They've looked lots of bad. And, yeah, Brandon Marshall's now out. You know, the defense is what the defense is. It's the type of defense that Drew Brees has the ability to take advantage of.
Sure.
And he's got some familiarity playing in that stadium. There was an NFC Championship game there a few years ago.
But he's also played some other pitiable defenses and not been able to take advantage.
Yeah, but the thing is we've seen the Saints team play well. And I would say recently, although last week was not it. I'm going to take the Saints here, and it's half because the Bears burned me last week picking them at home in a primetime situation. But it's more so that I just don't trust them. I don't trust the defense to not give up tons and tons of points to that Saint offense. I think they can get it going. I'm hoping that it'll be at least an entertaining game and like a shootout or something like that. But I expect the Saints to win. Or I'm going to pick them. I don't know about expect.
Well, that wraps up our week 15 minute picks. I'm sure you have a whole lot of confidence in why our reasoning for why we were picking either Chicago or New Orleans there.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the confidence was just abundant in my voice.
So, yes, those are our picks for week 15. Hopefully, I get all of them right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to wrap up this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast, so stay tuned.
All right.
All right. Well, this is we've reached the end here. This week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Before we do the formal wrappings up, it's time to read from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts.
Do it.
I've got 5 facts for you today, and of course, if these prove to not be facts, please let us know via Twitter, and you'll be rewarded handsomely for your sleuthing.
This is a questionably reliable source.
Yes. The new American Football League was formed in 1959. The league was the brainchild of Lamar Hunt, a former end for Southern Methodist University and the son of billionaire H.L. Hunt.
I might look that one up. I thought it was 1960, but anyway.
The first NFL expansion team to win the first league game it ever played was the Minnesota Vikings, who did it on their season opener in 1961.
Oh.
The New York Titans football team changed its name to the New York Jets in 1963. Quarterback Joe Namath of the New York Jets was nicknamed Broadway Joe because of his flamboyant style on and off the gridiron.
I think that one's true.
I'm pretty sure that one's true. In 1971, end Alan Page of the Minnesota Vikings became the first defensive player to win the NFL's Most Valuable Player Award.
Interesting.
And maybe J.J. Watt will be the first defensive player in quite some time to get it this year.
Perhaps.
It'll probably go to Aaron Rodgers, but still, it should be J.J.
Hey,
Watt.
You can, you know what? You should continue to bang the drum for J.J. Watt to win the MVP.
I'm all for it.
I don't think there's
been a player more enjoyable to watch this season. It doesn't matter to me, honestly, if the Texans don't end up with a winning record or don't go to the playoffs. I don't feel like that's the point of Most Valuable Player.
Mm-hmm.
I would reckon to say that whatever their record ends up being, half of those wins are pretty much directly related to stuff J.J. Watt did in those games. Like the Titans game, which was pretty much him dominating on every meaningful Titans play and succeeding.
Yeah, you can just go through their schedule and pick games and support that argument. So, no, he's been doing that all year.
He's been doing that all year.
I think you're absolutely right. You take him off that team, and what do you have?
What do you have?
You know, maybe a 3-4 win team.
Maybe.
You know? And they're still in the hunt. I mean,
they are. They are still in the hunt. They're one of the 12 out of 16 teams that I believe are all either 7 wins or better in the AFC right now.
A couple years, you know, it's funny. Just a couple years ago, and the balance was so favored for the NFC as far as power and the best teams and whatnot. There was like one or two in the AFC that could hang, and like. Now
it's the other way around.
I don't know if it's the other way around.
It's completely the other way around.
But there's definitely a lot going on in the AFC. There's a lot of good teams over there. It maybe is tipping their way at this point, you know, but I don't know if it's quite as lopsided as it was a few years ago the other way. So,
12 teams.
Yeah.
That's craziness. But if the Texans do make it to the playoffs, I expect that the J.J. Watt MVP stuff.
He should be in the talks regardless of what happens.
He should be in the discussion regardless of what happens.
Absolutely.
He's so much fun to watch. So that about does it, therefore, here at the F-Ball NFL podcast for this week. Big thank you again to CBS Sports NFL insider Jason Lockenfora for joining us. That was obviously a very good time. We have to do it again sometime.
Of course.
And, of course, a big thank you to all of our listeners out there joining us this week and every week and any week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can Google me. You can find my articles on TeamStream. You can also give my Facebook writer page a like. That's Facebook.com/AHengstNFL. You can get all my Bleacher Report content there as well. I also write about fantasy football for Pro Football Focus. It's profootballfocus.com. And you can find me on Twitter at @FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm still Brian.
He's still Brian.
Of course, I'm the producer of this here podcast, the F-Ball NFL podcast, as well as the co-host. And elsewhere, I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's @BFAT65.
All right, well, that wraps it up this week. We'll be back, of course, next Wednesday to talk about what happened in Week 15 and what we think might possibly happen in Week 16. There's only 3 games left for every team in the NFL. They're going to start getting into the postseason, so savor it while you can.
And there's so much to sort out,
fleeting.
Too. That's the craziness. There's so much to sort out.
There's so much to sort
out.
It's
all
going to
happen in the next 10 days,
The next 3 weeks are going to be incredible in the National Football League, so enjoy the games, and we'll be back next week. So be sure to join us.
Absolutely.
Peace.
Later.